On.
Hello and welcome to our latest Gate Drop pod. The motocross season is full on up and going, and we're also into the supercross season as well in America. But we're going to touch on MXGP. We're two rounds in at two very different tracks. Started the season in Argentina for the first flyaway of the year, and then came back for round two in Sardinia at the rough and gnarly Rio Luisardo soundtrack. Joining me, Johnny McCready. Johnny, it's great that MXGP is back, and Sunday mornings are very packed for us now with having to watch Supercross on MXGP, but sure we'll love it, don't we?
Yeah, last weekend there was busy, and a couple of weeks before that as well. It's just 48 hours of dirt bike racing, but you have to love it to do it, and we certainly do. And luckily, the racing has been really good as well. The first two rounds of MXGP, sort of providing different questions and answers each round there. So Jeffrey Herlings winning his 100th at the weekend, and with Ruben Fernandez winning his first at round one in Argentina. And amongst all that, you've Jorge Prado, who's actually collected the most points at round one, if you include these new heat races, and they're really keeping him alive. So he's got the red plate, and really, it's all going on. You don't know where to look sometimes.
I know exactly. I mean, it looked like for a couple of minutes that we were going to see Coldenhoff win the second round, joining Ruben Fernandez. I mean, if that had happened, who in their right mind would have predicted those two guys? No disrespect to them, because obviously they're very, very fast. But for anybody to predict those two to win the opening two rounds, but it very nearly happened. But Jeffrey Herlings had other ideas in the end, and he got the job done. He said before the start of the season he might not win to around five or six, but here we are, two rounds in. He's already won a GP. He might not be vintage hurlings for all the moto, but when he needs that speed, he's still able to deliver it. And what a comeback it was. Unbelievable to watch. Especially the battle at the end of that second moto between him, Renault, and Favre. Unbelievable racing.
Yeah, that was pretty special. At some point, all three were trying to go into the corner in the same line at once. And one of the stages, Renault slightly tapped Herlings going into that left-hander where Prado stalled. And you could see Herlings just hit the brakes. 3, 4 years ago, he probably would have just kept it pinned because he wouldn't want Renault getting the better of him in that situation. But I think now he's balancing this speed with patience and trying to be smart. Until those last two or three laps, he was probably all season quite reminiscent of Stefan Edberg, taking points when it's there. And he was letting everyone else make the mistakes, even in Argentina, and also again the first moto in main moto on Sunday in Raiola. But as you said, those last 10 minutes when he realized he could win the GP, he really started pouring it on in terms of speed. But even that battle, his pass was pretty clinical. He didn't want to get involved in those two bashing each other around. He kind of held back if he thought it was going to be dangerous. And when he saw the time to go, he passed them both in two corners and he was gone out of there. And obviously, you should mention Renault. He really picked up the pace. He's not intimidated by Jeffrey Herlings and sand whatsoever. He isn't really setting the headlines the first two rounds. He's had a couple of crashes, a couple of bad starts. First turn crash again in the heat race. But speed wise, I think he's right there. You could probably say the same, maybe except for that last moto for Jeremy Soer. But he's had bad luck. Well, no, but his crash in Argentina, and again, a big crash, the first moto in Riola there. And those two, I think, have the speed, but they don't quite have the results, maybe, that show the speed. Roman Favre's there as well, but again, he had that crash. I think that's why you've Jorge Prado and Jeffrey Herlings one and two. Herlings' starts haven't been great, but he's been smart. Prado's starts have been great, except for two, and that's the 2 sixth places he's had. And he's won everything else, four out of six motos. He started a lot stronger than I expected him to. I kind of expected him to start steady, and then it was going to be could he work his way into the championship? He's really started pretty explosively. But again, I think we're seeing when Prado starts, even in the top five, initially his first 5 minutes is good, but once he gets into a bar-to-bar battle with someone, it seems to take his rhythm away, and he doesn't have the pace he has whenever he's leading. And what you saw with Jeffrey Herlings, when the battle starts, that's when he's ready to roll up his sleeves and he can find more speed to really make the difference. And so far, it's coming down to Prado starts, but then Herlings has the ability to battle, go that extra wee bit, tough it out, whereas Prado seems to need to ride smooth and clean to show his speed. which at times is quicker than anyone else. But if he doesn't get that start, that's where he's struggling compared to Hurlings.
Yeah, exactly. I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I think whenever it comes down to this championship so far, obviously we're only two rounds in, but in terms of minimizing your mistakes, that's definitely Prado and Hurlings. I mean, if you look at the Yamaha guys, they've all had at least one crash each. Roman Febers had a few crashes. So, yeah, I mean, Hurlings and Prado consistency has been very, very good. And I think they've been smart. Well, Hurlings has been smart. Prado, as you say, has been getting the good starts. And he's very good at sprinting away if he gets a good start. So I think the others won't be too alarmed yet because we're only two rounds in. But it's going to get this stage where they know that they can't afford to get Prado to get a good start, because they've actually seen when he doesn't get the start that he's not, you know, running into the distance and they're actually able to beat him or run with him. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And the best thing about MXGP is we've already had two tracks that are pretty different. You know, Argentina, you'd have had a fast track, but very deceiving, you know, loose on top, but hard underneath. And then you had a ridiculously gnarly soundtrack. Now we're going to something completely different in Switzerland. It's going to be a new track, so nobody knows what to expect, but it's definitely going to be a hard pack and something completely different. So no doubt after that, there'll be no, more questions answered and maybe more questions to ask as well. So it's certainly a fascinating start to this championship, that's for sure.
Well, I think at the minute, the top five in the championship are probably the top five you'd have expected that had the chance at a championship. 25 points between Glenn Coldenhoff in fifth, and he's just won his first moto of the year, so he's going to come into round three on a high. And obviously Jorge Prado with the front with Jeffrey Hurlings, he's the gap down to just 7 points. He's getting very close to breaking Stefan Edberg's record. But Ruben Fernandez, he's now seventh. It's kind of a bit of a roller coaster first couple of rounds, and I think the biggest shame for him in Raiola was the question coming in was, could he repeat the speed in the deep sand? Obviously, Spanish, that's not what he's known for. And the answer was yes. Yeah, he had the speed even past Jeffrey Hurlings, but those two crashes have really killed him. He's down to seventh in the championship, as I said. But actually, speed-wise, he was right there. So I think you're going to have to maybe add him in as a factor. But I almost feel sorry for him because he did the hard bit, which was having the speed. He just had a couple of crashes that sort of ruined his whole weekend, really, at 111th place out of the two Sunday motos.
Yeah, it was kind of a throwback to his MX2 days where he would have been really fast, but maybe a little bit wild.
Yeah.
And obviously, after being on such a high at winning, you know, he was obviously going to give it everything he had in Raiola. But as you say, he had the speed there. And the good news is, you know, he doesn't have to ride those conditions every week. Mm-hmm. And seeing how quick he was in those conditions, he's definitely going to be fast and a contender to run at the front.
He's going to be a factor all year, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, the way he's riding. And, you know, the thing about it is the pressure hasn't got to him. You know, he's under that awning. Everyone's working for him. That's a lot of pressure to handle, especially for a young rider. He's only in his second year of full MXGP season. So he's took to it like a duck to water, and he's not fazed by anyone. And yeah, don't be surprised if he's able to run at the front. Very, very impressive start to the season. And probably you would say the biggest surprise in MXGP so far, but yeah, only two rounds in. So I'm sure there's plenty of surprises left to come.
And we're going to have Geyser added in here in probably a few weeks or maybe a couple of months, but that sort of intensity at the front, you could definitely see in Raiola, and even the first couple of laps in Argentina are always scary because the track's so fast, but the intensity's there. And Hurlings has added to that. Prado is probably on the best form of his 450 career, which is great to see. If you can sort that, sort of getting maybe overwhelmed by other riders battling him and sort of losing his own pace because of that, he's going to be very difficult to beat as well because of those starts. And he really only has one weakness, and that's getting embroiled in a battle and losing his rhythm. Hurlings has mentioned he wants to work on his starts, which for him, it basically just makes his life easier. It's not that he can't win with average starts, but maybe with it being in the sand there, that sort of helped him a bit. But Raiola is hard to pass on. Although if you're getting bad starts, maybe in Switzerland, you're coming from the back or you're pushed off the track like it was in Raiola, it might be more difficult to come through. Because you have more guys at that elite level on the hard pack, but still probably not great for the rest. That Hurlings didn't look his best, even in the sand, until that final 10 minutes when it really mattered. Now he's got the confidence he can win again. And he's only 7 points behind Prado, who, as we said, has won 4 out of 6 motos. Prado probably wishes he had a bigger points lead at this point over Herlings and the rest as well. We're ahead of him in the championship because it looks like he's picking up, getting to his A game maybe quicker than he expected himself even.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing about Geoffrey Herlings is coming into the season, he said himself he might not win until round 5 or 6. He's already won at round 2, but even better for him in the championship is, I mean, if you're Geoffrey Herlings now, you shouldn't really be thinking about the championship. Just take it one GP at a time. But the reality is, the way the championship is now, it could be him and Prado, because these other guys are already making mistakes. I'm only 2 rounds in, and he's literally second in the championship. So that's a really, really encouraging thing for Geoffrey Herlings. After a couple of rounds, he could have been 6th or 7th in the championship, and he still would have been thinking, it's a long season, I can still win this. But the fact he's second and only one rider ahead of him is very, very encouraging. And we all know he's going to get more and more comfortable as the season goes on. I just hope he keeps the race strategy he has been using it the first couple of rounds, where, you know, the first 10 or 15 minutes, he's just letting the race come to him. He's not pushing above the limit or anything like that. And then once he decides it's go time, he still has that speed to go. I think if he keeps racing with that strategy, I think it'll see him do well, and he'll remain consistent and hopefully no injuries, which has been, you know, his Achilles heel, and why he only has 5 world titles, as bizarre as that sounds, because it's really, really hard to win 5 world titles. But if he was able to, you know, to match the GP record that he has, 100 GP wins, that should equal a lot more than 5 world titles. So he'll be hoping this will be the year he can get his 6th.
Yeah, if you look at the GP wins, it doesn't tally with the championships he had, but in terms of GP wins, it looks like he's going to break the record, you would imagine, within the next couple of rounds, probably by round 5 anyway. And from there, he's just going to be building a record. I mean, Ricky Carmichael has 102 outdoor wins. Stefan Edberts is 101. Geoffrey's going to have more wins than either of them. And I'm not sure who's ever going to beat that record. He's planning on a race another 2 or 3 years. He's certainly going to win GPs, you would imagine, over the next 3 years, barring injury. But even accounting for injury, he's still going to get this record. How someone's going to win that amount of races overall, whether you're in America with a 12-round series, GPs with a roughly 18, 19-round series, as competitive as it is, yeah, that he could hold that record for a very, very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that does kind of frustrate me, I see people on social media saying, oh, you can't count his MX2GP overall wins. Why would you count them? You know, when he was racing that class, he was beating these guys he's racing against now. So why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
The thing is, these guys weren't highly rated when they're racing an MX2 for some bizarre reason. They only get the credit when they go to MXGP. Don't ask me why, but yeah, MX2 is very fast, and it always has been. And it'll continue to be very fast. So absolutely, we should be counting his MX2 GP wins. He was just an absolute freak of nature and beating everyone, waxing them somehow.
You basically can't go faster than Geoffrey
Herlings.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah. So it's a bit harsh to take GP wins off him for being so good.
Yeah, it's not. If you go, actually, when you do go back and look, he won GPs against Roxanne Musquin when he was 15 and 16. Yeah. He raced Paul Ann. Mm. He raced Roman Favre there.
Coldenhoff,
Sewer,
Geyser.
Mm-hmm. All, as you said, people didn't realize how good those guys were because he was beating them by so much. Dylan Ferrandis,
exactly.
All these highly rated guys. Now everyone loves Ferrandis in America for being amazing, but he could only win the odd moto against Geoffrey when everything went perfectly for him and imperfectly for Herling. So again, that sort of underlines the point, like, who on earth is ever going to win that many races? He's kind of the Ricky Carmichael of GPs without the championships for him, because the speed is that dominant. Maybe more James Stewart, but James' sort of wins weren't quite as consistent. We're just looking at the win record for Jeremy McGrath, and, you know, his looks untouchable. Even with Eli Tomac and James Stewart on 50, Jeremy's still over 20 ahead, and I think that sort of level of record, it's what Geoffrey Herlings could retire with on the race wins category. It's just going to be something that's going to be there. He could be 70, 80 years old, and his name will still be at the top of that list. So 450 XGP, really, really good. I think Calvin Villandrin showed himself again at Riola. I think he definitely had flashbacks, confidence and momentum from 2022 last year when he dominated. He had that similar speed again, but I think Prado was stronger. Obviously, Herlings is there. And he made a couple of mistakes himself, but all in all, the riding from Calvin Villandrin was really, really good. And hopefully he can bring that forward to the rest of the season, because that just adds another contender in those podium positions.
Yeah, absolutely. All in all, a solid weekend for Calvin. I think he probably had podium speed. The problem is there was five or six guys that had podium speed.
And exactly, yeah.
At the end of the weekend, they can't all stand there, you know. So, but it was just, I think it was that cross with Sir cost him the podium, really, which was a bit of a shame. I think he just tried to force that pass and there wasn't really any room down that inside. Maybe in reflection, maybe he should have just took his time and tried to pass in another area, because, like I say, he definitely had the speed. But, you know, it's fine margins at the top of MXGP at the minute. It's very, very difficult to get a podium. I mean, somehow Maxime Renault rode really, really well, and he didn't get a podium either. So yeah. It's easier said than done at the minute, and hopefully they can all stay injury-free and they can all deliver great battles as the season progresses. Another rider that actually impressed me at Riola was Brent Van Donick as well. Obviously, he showed a lot of speed in pre-season, but he had a little bit of a setback the week before at the Dutch Masters. I think he hurt his wrist, so he wasn't even sure, I think, the day after if he was even going to be able to race Riola. So he was able to race, and he was comfortably in the top 10 overall. So very, very good weekend for him, and something for him to build on.
So whenever I look at the top three in the championship, it's Jorge Prado, Geoffrey Herlings, Maxime Renault. And obviously with Fevre there as well, tied with Renault. Are we starting to get a veteran versus the next generation battle brewing here? You have Herlings now in the veteran category. Maxime Renault, Jorge Prado, I think they're both about 21, 22.
Yeah, something around that, yeah.
They're the next generation that could go on to win multiple titles, but they're here already, and it's like Geoffrey and Roman are trying to keep that wave from breaking, really. Obviously, Geoffrey's still only 27, but he's had a lot of miles on the clock from his 15, a lot of injuries. And it's looking that Prado finally hasn't been injured over in the off-season. He looks like his health with the COVID and everything's figured out. He looks like he's the bike figured out. As we mentioned, it's just that rhythm when he's in a battle. But by and large, this is the best we've seen him. At times when he gets away, it looks like it's MX2 level, Jorge Prado. And Maxime Renault looks like he's going from strength to strength. His issue's more starts, but speed-wise, he's right there. And I don't think either of them, importantly, are intimidated by Geoffrey Herlings sitting on the gate. Maybe Roman Frevers, the only other one who really believes he can beat Geoffrey. And Roman certainly has that inner fight that you need to be world champion on the pace. But for the likes of Prado and Renault to come in, even on a sand track, we saw what Renault was doing there with Geoffrey, not afraid to go back past him. He doesn't sort of have any mental intimidation over those two guys, I think. And Renault looks like he's got the stuff when he needs to dig deep that he can produce. Again, it's just the starts for him. But everything else, he's good in every... Saw Riota there. He knows how to ride a 450 in sand now, even against Geoffrey Herlings. It looks to me like it's almost generational warfare now in 450 MXGP.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on Renault, I think he's very, very impressive in terms of speed, because, like you say, he doesn't get the starts and he always sort of finds a way to get to the front somehow, even if he does have mistakes here or there. So that's not an easy thing to do in MXGP, and he just needs to practice and get out of that gate a little bit better, because he definitely has got the speed. I mean, if you swapped his starts for Prado's, I'm not sure. Maybe he could, but because Prado isn't that used to coming up through the field, he would probably need to take two or three races, you know, of having to deal with that to overcome it, because he's so good at getting out of the gate. He doesn't need to usually worry too much about passing lots of riders. So one to keep an eye on. But fortunately for Prado, he's very good out of the gate. So that's something else for the other riders to worry about, maybe. And in terms of the generational thing, I think you are right, but, you know, Prado's contract ends soon, and if he doesn't stay at GasGas, will he even stay in MXGP?
Well, there's talk he could be as next year. So
that's one to keep an eye on. But
he's always talked about that as well. It looked for a while like he was happy to stay in GP, but if he doesn't get a world title this year, will he want to stay? until he gets the world title. Stefan Edwards was in a similar situation in the mid-90s. He stayed till he won a world title, and then once he won the world title, he felt he was too old to go to America, so he went on to become the the best rider ever and win those 10 world titles and 101 GP. So Prado looks like he's sort of in a similar window there that Stefan was in 94, 95.
Absolutely. Well, I think the thing is, I don't really see Prado moving to another team in the MXGP paddock. So
true, yeah.
If he's not happy with his team, who knows? He could go to America, but all fingers crossed, you know, he suits GasGas, and GasGas will probably need him for the future. So hopefully both parties are happy with each other and he'll continue in MXGP. But in terms of the new generation in MXGP, they will be joined by Iago Gertz next year. And he won't really be under any pressure in his rookie season. And we saw how fast he is on the 450 at Redbud, where he literally ran with Eli Tomac at his own backyard. Turn. So yeah. He's one to keep an eye on. And he's obviously going to be on that factory Yamaha, which is looking so good. So exciting, very future. The future is very exciting for him and the front of MXGP, I think.
That brings us nicely to MX2. Great segue there. Gertz and DeWolf. We'll give a bit of a high five to Simon Langenfelder as well for about 15-20 minutes of especially that first moto. He was hanging with them. But the pace those two were setting, DeWolf, the way he rides the sand, is just something to behold. I think it looks good on TV, but if you can, you have to get a chance to see that in person. It's pretty unique. It's so almost emotional the way he rides. He just puts everything in it. He makes David Willeman look like a statue on a bike. He moves about so much, but it's more than effective the way he does it. Only Iago could really run with him, but Iago was pretty classy. Yes, he made two quite Iago mistakes. Tip over on a stall on that first one, but I think we've seen when he needed the speed to catch Langenfelder and DeWolf, he was able to do it. But by the same token, DeWolf has that grit. We spoke about Jeffrey having that in the 450s. DeWolf can dig deep. He's not afraid to let it hang out. And he saw with his emotion of getting that first win how much it meant to him. And I think he feels he's a world title contender because he mentioned how much the pressure kind of intimidated himself with the pressure in the opening round and made mistakes. But he was nigh on perfect in Raiola. His only mistake was probably Gertz in that first lap of race two. Put on a pretty assertive display of I'm the man going around the outside of DeWolf, and even DeWolf couldn't push him out going into that. I think it was a right-hander. That was a key pass because it's so hard to pass there and their pace was so similar. Try as he might, DeWolf just could not get close enough to make a pass on Gertz to win the Grand Prix. And Iago, when it really counted and the pressure was on, he delivered again. And he's only still lost one moto all year, and he's pretty much the guy to beat. DeWolf, he's got the world's pace in the sand, which on the one, the second moto before he seconds over everyone else. And you'd say on the hard pack, he has similar pace to Benistone on Benistone's prime, and he's amazing on hard pack. So he's his two closest title contenders covered in terms of it's going to be hard for either of them to beat him on their own best conditions. So I think Gertz is still the guy to beat. But on any given day, those two and maybe Simon Langenfelder can run with him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Iago Gertz, I think we'll have to be very, very impressed with him. His crashes almost don't make sense because, you know, especially in that first moto, you know, he was just sort of controlling things at the front because he had the speed there if he needed it. I mean, if after the first crash, I think he was 5 or 6 seconds down, he caught it up in 2 or 3 laps. And then after he stalled the bike, I think he was 7 or 8 seconds down. And again, he caught that up in 2 or 3 laps. So it goes to show that if he wanted to, he probably could have pulled it away at the front more if he wanted. But he was happy just controlling things to front. So you can't blame, you know, the crashes on him pushing over the limit or anything like that. It's just, it's hard to put your finger on because he is so smooth as well.
He doesn't look on the edge ever. And then suddenly he's made a mistake. He's picking the bike up.
Possibly concentration issues. Who knows? But, I mean, he's just so good on a bike. He's unbelievable. And I think even though Kaido Wolf riding really, really well, I think the one thing we need to point out here is experience. You know, Iago Gertz is 4 or 5 years older than Kaido Wolf. Give Kaido Wolf another 4 or 5 years and what a rider he's going to be.
Kai's almost where Iago was 3 or 4 years ago. It's almost like a replica of having the speed but not quite getting the start and then having to push harder or pressure of leading, it's kind of the same thing Iago was ensuring 3 or 4 years ago that he seems to have basically figured out even last year.
Yeah, the thing is, though, Iago, you know, was battling against Prado and Vial for World Championship, and they're similar ages, whereas Kaido Wolf is literally 4 or 5 years younger than Iago Gertz. And even though he wants to be world champion now, you know, sometimes you need to just take a seat back and realize, you know, I've got 4 or 5 years, you know, to improve. I'm what a rider he's going to be. But at the minute, experience, Iago Gertz has been there and done that. That was his 18th GP win. That also doesn't tally up with his world championships. He hasn't got any, and he's won 18 GPs. You would like to think up by the end of this year, he's going to be well into the 20s, because he's riding phenomenally well in that factory Yamaha, and he's going to be hard to beat. And as you say, he can ride pretty much any conditions. And okay, yes, he can be beaten on any given day, but he's going to be very, very consistent. And, you know, even for him not to be on the podium, something's probably going to have to go wrong.
So maybe the most impressive ride, aside from De Wolf and Gertz, but you kind of expected that, was Lucas Koenen, fourth place in that second moto. He was sixth in the first one, which is still pretty impressive. But for 5 minutes there, he and Benistone, so shout out to Benistone, the Raoul is not exactly what France is when you're growing up. The two of them hung on for about 5 minutes to Gertz and De Wolf in the opening, or the second moto, start of the second moto. But Koenen hounded Benison for that entire moto, 30 plus 2, 16 years old, no fear. He even said at, I think, the start of the first moto that he knows he can run with these guys, so confidence isn't an issue. And he's right to have that confidence, because it's not misplaced or delusional whatsoever. He's got the ability to do that. With Koenen and De Wolf coming through, there's some, I would say, generational talent of riders in MX2 just waiting to become the kings of that class. That's if Koenen and obviously his brother Sasha, who's injured at the minute, stay in GPs. They're already looking towards America by 2025 possibly, but Koenen's rate of improvement, he's where I thought he would be halfway into the season. He's there already, and that's including that big crash in Argentina that he had when he basically had the whole shot and crashed with Langenfelder. So he's smart, but sometimes he looks like he's kind of riding the edge, but he's sort of just about under it. And it looks like he's a fast learner, and he's like 16 years old to be getting a look at what Iago Gertz is doing in the sand, and to be able to learn from it and be right on his teammate, who's tipped to be a world championship contender. The guy's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, it doesn't really surprise me that much. And I mean, when I seen him at Lama last year, I was like, this kid is the real deal, and he'll have no problem adapting to MX2. And as you say, it's their mentality. You know, they're not really scared of who they're racing against, because they're probably just seeing this as a 2-year project before they go on to achieve their dreams in America. So that's maybe part of the reason why they're able to take this big jump up. Just part of the process. It's normal for them. And very, very, him and Benistad had a very, very good battle. Both showed their determination there, really. Benny started to hold him off, and Koenen didn't give him an inch each way. So it was great to watch, and look out for those two. They'll certainly be a lot closer to the front than Hardpack, you would imagine, especially Benistad. And obviously, it's harder to make such a big difference in Hardpack than it is in sand. So the differences shouldn't be as big.
And Sasha's still to come back. We're not sure when he'll come back with a shoulder injury, but speed-wise, he's not far off Lucas. He's just a bit wilder, but I think that's more to do with height than anything. So if you've got Lucas, you're going to have another guy on a pretty similar level. You'd maybe say he's about a year behind. Obviously, he's missing all this time as well, so that's going to hurt him. But Sasha's going to be up there too, both just turned 16. The other KTM rider, Sasha's teammates, Liam Everts, he came into round one with a wrist injury, but he really impressed me in Argentina. He'd pace stronger than what I was expecting with that wrist. Certainly top five. Podium wasn't even out of reach for him. Raioli did a solid first moto, but the second moto surprised me a wee bit that he kind of dropped back to eighth. He didn't think he was a bit
crashed,
disappointed
think,
as well.
I think
yeah.
he crashed.
But maybe you're expecting a wee bit more. But I think overall, for both him and Adamo showed really good pace at times too, even in the sand there at the weekend. I think they're probably about where you'd expect them to be, that kind of 4-8, with, if they get a good start, definitely possibilities of a podium. And Again, I mentioned Lucas Koonin, obviously his first time in a factory ride, but I guess it's the same really for these two in a factory team with pressure. And I think they're doing pretty good so far.
Yeah, well, I think Liam will be frustrated with Raiola because he was fifth and then he went off the track, and I think that dropped him to ninth, and then that's where he's finished. And then I think he was sixth in the second moto, and then he had a crash, which dropped him to eighth. So without those mistakes, he would have been fifth,
there,
with fifth and sixth, which is where you would say he probably should be in those conditions. Obviously, on hard pack and less rougher tracks, maybe not always fifth and sixth, but he excels in those type of tracks. So that's probably where you'd put him. And it's just a shame he hasn't got the results that reflected his
I
speed,
think his
really.
speed's better
But
than the
that,
results,
yeah. Yeah, exactly, around there. And Adamo benefited from that, really. You would probably say rough sand. Everts is probably going to beat him 9 times out of 10, but Everts made the mistakes, and Adamo was solid all weekend long, really. They're not his conditions whatsoever. So I think he had a reasonably good day, and he's happy the conditions aren't like that every week. But in hard pack, I don't think Adamo will be too far away from the front, if I'm being honest. Top four, probably, if he can get out of the gate anyway. But you know, starts are very, very important in MX2, and especially hard pack. It's going to be
Each
one more
class and hard
line.
pack too,
Yeah. But the starts are important because it's very one line, harder to pass. So if he can get the starts, he can run with probably Iago and Benny Stanton any given day. It's just going to be a question of whether he can do it consistently enough and keep getting out of that gate.
Yeah, I think we're seeing in MX2 how important it is to be on a good bike as well. It's those sort of that top 10 to 12. I think Elsinga was actually impressive in Argentina, but I think he was a bit ill at Raiola, which is a bit of a shame for him, because after coming off a good performance in Raiola, he's a sandmaster as well and should have really suited him this last weekend there. But you need to be on a good bike in MX2, and all the top guys are on good bikes, and you can sort of see they're breaking away from the sort of talented privateer type teams as well. So there's a bit of a, maybe the first 8 to 10 definitely in the league of their own so far that we're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say so. Although Aurel Olivier, shout out to him getting the whole shot with the WZKTM. And he hanging out there as long as he could. He's a good rider with potential. Probably one to watch. He just needs to keep learning with these guys. But because obviously he missed most of last year after getting injured. So hasn't raced much. And it'll be a good experience for him to ride at the front of MX2 and just learn as he goes along.
So Simon Langenfelder, he's kind of hovering around there with DeWulf, Benistan, who are trying to take down Gertz, not literally. Switzerland, I think, is going to be a big one for him, because we know he's good in the sand. It's whether he can deliver that on the hard pack. Do you see him going with DeWulf and Benistan in the chase for Gertz going forward, or is he going to sort of slip back into the Adamo Everts level?
Well, as I touched on earlier, starts are important, but I think he can be right there. Yeah, I mean, you said earlier about the first moto, 15 minutes. I thought it was 25 minutes he was with them. I was very, very impressed. It was sort of only really the last five where they started to get away. And then probably because he pushed so hard in the first moto to stay with them, it's such a physically demanding track, probably got a little bit tired, and that probably hindered him in the second moto.
Well, he had
and if
good
he knew
pace
that,
coming through, and then it looked like that last 10 minutes got to him, because he was...
Exactly. So
he
he
still had the
probably
speed, it was just
he
probably the energy.
Probably going with Kai and Iago for the whole first moto probably didn't help in the end, because such a physical track, that was probably why he was tired at the end. Bit of a shame, because his speed, I mean, the guys that passed him, he passed all them at the start, so it'd be a bit frustrated because he was literally quicker than them. He just obviously got tired with it, pushed so hard in the first moto. But yeah, I think he'll probably win races and be a consistent podium rider. I think he's very, very underrated, to be honest. Really impressive rider.
I think he's a wee bit like Prado in that if he gets away, he can run the pace. But can he come through week in, week out? And his starts aren't always... Iago's starts are actually pretty good, which isn't really good for everyone else. For years, he kind of struggled with that, and that's what gave Prado and Vial the gap a lot of times, even if he was fast. And this... Even last year, his starts were good. This year, his starts were good. So if you're Langenfelder, even DeWulf, that's where it's making life difficult for you, because generally Iago's going to be top three off the start, and they're maybe third to eighth, give or take.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an interesting one. Like I said, starts are going to be very, very important. especially the way the rip tracks these days with so many ruts, but it really only really creates one good rut, so it makes passing a bit of a disaster. So it's going to be very important, and those guys are all pretty similar speed as it is anyway, unless it's rough sand that we've seen at the weekend. So it's going to be interesting, but the rest are just probably praying that Iago gets a bad start. But his Yamaha's shooting out of the gate every time, so be interesting to see if he gets buried in the start to see what happens. All the other ones will probably see that and then really push hard to try and get breakaway.
Yeah, I haven't really seen, he hasn't had to come from the back really yet, and probably says, well, coming into the year, he wasn't 100% healthy, and he still won every Moto bar one.
Yeah.
So I think that's, when you look back at these first two rounds, Iago's what we thought he was going to be, the guy to beat.
I think he's already got 30 points gap in the championship after two rounds. So it goes to show how big of a difference these Saturday qualifying races points are actually making.
Yeah, well, just touching that quickly before we wrap this up. For me, they've been a fantastic addition. And for Prado, going back to 450 brief, MXGP briefly, that's been really key for him. That's got him 20 extra points and really helped keep him the red plate. It adds a wee bit of intensity too. If Jeffrey Herlings gets a bad start, he's only 20 minutes to come through in those races. So I think it adds more pressure on the riders to deliver and have less margin for error. And at the minute, it's actually helping the championship keep it mixed up. Maybe not so much in MX2 with the way Iago's riding, but again, it's still pretty interesting. For young riders, even if Coonan gets a start, he only has to run 20 minutes instead of the 30 to try and beat a guy like Iago, so it can improve those guys' confidence too.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Iago would have had a big points difference regardless anyway. Yeah, he's won three out of the four motos on a Sunday, and it's not like, you know, the Wolves went 2-2-1-2. That would have kept it close, but that hasn't happened. So, I like the points points in the qualifying races, because in the past, you know, when they got into position, they would have just settled, you know, if they were in the top five and they would have been happy that everyone sort of knew it, whereas the points now can't really settle and they're going off. It's basically another moto just, but shorter.
Yeah.
So it's good that way. The only thing I would maybe do is just give points to the top five potentially, but either way, I don't really mind. It's working well, I think.
Yeah, I suppose the top 10, the reason behind that is to keep more riders into the battle with even Jeffrey there in Argentina, still got a point there. And actually that was Prado won that, so that was 9. So that's your difference at the top of the championship in that one race. It just underlines that these are important. We saw Renault when he got to 11th. He went down in the first turn at Raiola, so you give him even a fifth there, you know, that's another 5-6 points that would be added to his total. So it is already playing a part of this championship. So I think fair play to Infront for implementing that, because I think it's been a great addition to the championship. I've seen a few people complaining MotoGP here about a sprint race, which is a bit bizarre, but they only race once over 3 days and people still don't want them racing. Even amongst some of the media, it was kind of weird.
The sprint race was actually better than the main race in MotoGP.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was three times as good. So some of those media guys probably would be shocked and appalled at motocross riders.
I know, how Durban
the race three times, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And then, exactly. And because you've got two good classes, you actually see six really good motos.
Pre-season races and a motocross of nations all added in. Don't tell them about America with a race, supercross and motocross in 1 year.
I know.
That would blow their minds.
I know, unbelievable.
That's MXGP, I think, Andy. Is there anything else you want to add in here before we go?
That's me happy enough just that I ain't going to the next round, so I'm counting down the days. Can't wait to go to Switzerland and see my friends in Switzerland.
Switzerland. Right. We'll speak to you all later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ciao.